It is said that the origin of war begins with theft. And there's hardly been a time period in the history of this world, from the time man first organized into nation states or even clans or groups, that there hasn't been a war going on of some type or another. I forget the exact number of years in the whole history of mankind when peace has actually been on this earth. And it's often said that peace is simply an interval preparing for the next war. So we're quite familiar with it. Jesus said there'd be wars and rumors of wars constantly. So he said, don't be alarmed about these things. So there are constant battles going on between men, physical men and the physical kingdoms of this earth. But that's not the battle I'm going to talk about today. I'm going to talk about a different battle. I'm going to talk about the spiritual battle we all face. So the topic of my sermon is, are we winning the war within? Are we winning the war within? Now, what do I mean by that? Well, here's what Paul says in Romans 7, verse number 25. So then, with the mind I serve the law of God, but with the flesh, the law of sin. So the struggle goes on between the mind and the flesh, and it is a constant warfare going on. It isn't just a battle, it's a war. We have often heard of incidents and wars where the certain country won the battle but lost the war. So this is a long-range war we're engaged in from the time we come to a knowledge of the truth. Notice what Paul said in verse 20. He's talking about willing to do what God desired, and he said, now, if I do what I will not to do, it is no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells in me. Sin that dwells in him. I find then a law that evil is present with me. Present with me. Well, I can tell you, it's present in every single one of us, too. And then he goes on to say, I delight in the law of God according to the inward man, but I see another law in my members, warring against the law in my mind and bringing me into captivity to the law which is in my members. We were all born with a nature that's contrary to God's will and God's desire. Our own human nature and our own minds are our own worst enemies. So, as Paul summarizes it very briefly here in Galatians, the fifth chapter, and verse number 17, he says, for the flesh lusts against the spirit, and the spirit against the flesh, and these are contrary one to the other. So you do not do what you do not do the things that you wish. How many times has that happened to us? How many times do we see where we should have done something different? We should have said something differently. We should have acted in a different manner. It's because of the pull of this human nature. Now, I can tell you, the disciples had the same problems. They were with Christ for 3.5 years, and you'd certainly think, being that close in personal contact with Christ, they wouldn't suffer that same way. But here's what Jesus said in Matthew 26 and verse number 41. He said, watch and pray, lest you enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. The flesh is weak. So it is an ongoing battle that we all face and will continue to face as long as we're in these fleshly bodies. The mind and the flesh, then, can be our own worst enemy. We often have people who have bad feelings, ill will toward other people, and they view others as their enemy. That enemy doesn't amount to anything compared to this enemy within. And we are our own worst enemy. Go right back here to the beginning. In Genesis chapter 6 and verse number 5, the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. It became a way of life. It became a lifestyle. So that in 1656 years, God had to destroy all human life from the face of this earth. Man had, by his conduct and his behavior and his thoughts and his actions, had forfeited the right to continue living. And of course, as we know, just one family was preserved. Yet notice what Isaiah said here. In Isaiah, the 63rd chapter, here's a very good statement here regarding the condition that man is in. Isaiah 63 and verse number 17. O Lord, why have you made us to stray from your ways? Why have you made us that way? And hardened our heart from your fear. Now, I'll tell you, if you don't know anything about God, you know, I often think they have some real good specials occasionally on some of the channels, particularly the digital channels, where they show history and examples of men and women who were martyred for their beliefs, generally in England, because that's what it's dealing with. And I often think, you know, here were people who spoke out against the established religion of the day and eventually were burned at the stake or hung or had their heads cut off, and they were willing to die for their beliefs in those things. What I always wonder about, now that's noble, I'm not bad-mouthing that, because these were people who had their convictions. But I often wonder, would they have done the same thing? How would they have reacted if they had had the truth? See, they didn't have the truth. They were anti-church, or they were a hierarchy or something of that nature. But how would the response have been, or what would they have done if they'd had the truth? You see, human beings have their own ideas and their own ways. And their own ways cause men in general to stray from God, even though they may have noble motives in what they do. We have to realize that God made us as such that we stray from His ways constantly, and we have hardened our hearts to His fear. Psalm 19, verse number 12. Psalm 19, verse number 12. Who can understand His errors? Now, how many times has this happened to you? You say something or you do something, then you say, why did I do that? I had a man tell me one time, he said, I don't know why it is. I always lie when the truth would serve me better. And that's really true. People say things and do things, and a good bit of the time they don't understand why. You know, you think about some of the very, very brilliant men who were the forefounders of our country, and one thing that many of them had in common, they kept journals. And they would sit down every evening, they'd write down everything that happened in the day, and they'd try to ask why that happened. And then they'd go back maybe 6 months or a year, and they'd read those journals over again. And they'd be reminded of it, and they'd ask themselves, now, did I learn by that? Some of those men were self-educated. And it just shows you that we have to realize, who can understand His errors? Cleanse me from secret or hidden faults. So the psalmist is writing that, evidently a psalm of David. And a lot of the faults and things we do, we're not even aware of them, we don't even recognize. Proverbs 20 and verse number 9. Proverbs 20, verse 9. Who can say, I have made my heart clean, I am pure from sin? Who can say that? I've mentioned this before. I sat by a young man at the Feast of Tabernacles a few years ago, and he assured me that he'd overcome everything. He was so self-deceived about human nature. He didn't even realize it is a lifelong battle we all have to face as long as we live. And just as we read here, who can say, I have made my heart clean, I am pure from sin? Who can say that? There's no man on the face of this earth that can say that. Now, of course, this particular text here, we know it very well, all of us. Let me just touch on it briefly here, because it is a good reminder. Here's what Jesus said. He described what the problem was with man's thoughts and man's behavior. He said here, this is Mark 7 and verse number 20. He said, That which comes out of a man, that defiles a man. For from within, out of the heart of men. Now, does that mean his ticking heart? Of course not. The heart is just simply the instrument that keeps us alive physically. It's talking about the mind, the intent, the whole being of man that causes him to think and act in such a way that he does. Out of the heart of men proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lewdness, an evil eye, or some translate envy, blasphemy, pride, and foolishness. All these evil things come from within and defile the man. 12 evils are mentioned here. 12 characteristics of human nature here. So this is the problem. Let's go back to the book of Ecclesiastes here. We have two or three texts here we can refer to more or less in order, and they will certainly add to what I'm saying here. Ecclesiastes 7, verse number 29. Truly, this only have I found, that God made man upright. That is, he made him to be upright, and that righteousness comes from God. But they have sought out many schemes. How many people go through a whole series of self-justification, even when they do things that are wrong, and they'll just absolutely convince themselves in their own mind what they did is right? Oh, they invent all kinds of schemes. People do not like to feel guilty about anything. And this is why you find people will never accept any fault, never accept any blame for anything, and everything is always somebody else's fault. Have you known people like that? Sure you have. Maybe you've done it yourself. I'll tell you one thing about an honest man in the sight of God. That's a man that owns up to his faults, willing to admit them, to confess them to God. He that covers his sins will not prosper. But he who confesses and shakes them, gets rid of them, forsakes them, will have mercy. So this is a problem we all face as human beings. This is a boat we're all in together, whether we like it or not. You can't change it. You cannot change human nature. Human nature cannot be changed without some outside help and power, and that only comes from God. That's the only place you can get it. You can't do it on your own. You cannot lift yourself up by your own bootstraps. No one can. Jesus said, without me, you can do nothing. Now, did he mean what he said? And yet I know there are people that somehow convince themselves that they're Christians, and they never pray. They're too busy to spend any time on their knees praying to God to help them. Or in some cases, they don't even think they need it. Without God, we can do nothing. And then in Ecclesiastes 8, verse number 11, this is certainly true in the world in which we live today, because the sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily. Therefore, the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. You're not going to be punished for what they do. Now, you look at the judicial system we have in the world today, and that doesn't describe it. Some of these people sit on death row for 15 years before they're finally executed. Yet the whole thing is just ridiculous. Now, am I advocating a death sentence? Well, yes, depending on whether or not it can really be proven the man is guilty. The sad part about the society today is that there are men who are in prison who have actually been condemned who are never guilty. And this is when you have a... Yeah, that's why... There are men who have actually gone to death on a death sentence on the basis of one witness. The Bible forbids that. No man, it says, I'm paraphrasing it, no man will be condemned to death without two or three witnesses. And yet, as we've found out in modern times, even witnesses are not reliable. So, and only God can straighten this thing out, and he will in due time, But men do not fear either physical punishment, and they certainly don't fear God. And that's why they continue on this mad course that men are on in this world today. And it just, I don't know how you folks feel, but it just makes me sick When I hear some convict that's been released and he's gone right out and killed a group of people again, and some psychologist, a psychiatrist in prison decided he was all right. It's sick. Ecclesiastes 9, verse number 3. This is an evil, all that is done under the sun. That one thing happens to all. Truly, the hearts of the sons of men are full of evil. Madness is in their hearts while they live, and after that they go to the dead. So in general, unless there is some guideline and some authority and some moral code that carries weight and means what it says, men are essentially going to do what they want to do. The only reason we get by as well as we do is because for the good of society we have these laws. It's like Jerry Spence said. He said, the problem with the judicial system today is it's like a big train that's sitting on the track, and it's off of the track, and it isn't going anywhere. It's just sitting there. So it isn't really solving the problem. But, I mean, you know, people, they get angry at the police. They dislike authority. What would it be like if they were not here? Can you imagine? You talk about anarchy. You talk about every man being armed and every man for himself. That's exactly what it would be. We go back to six guns. So we can be glad. But see, here's what the problem is. The hearts of the Son of Man are full of evil. And this is a category we have all been bequeathed with by virtue of the fact that we're human beings. Now, does that mean everybody is evil in the same way and to the same degree? No. There are many law-abiding citizens and people who live decent lives within the environs of society. And that's well and good. That's the way it should be. But we're dealing with another law altogether that has been largely overlooked, and that's the law of God and the Ten Commandments. That's one people don't want to pay any heed to, particularly two of those commandments, the fourth and the seventh. So you see very plainly here that it is a very difficult task to live a decent, godly life when you live in a society that is just hell-bent on destruction, and that's the way societies in general seem to be going. Psalm 65, verses 2 and 3. Psalm 65, verses 2 and 3. Iniquities prevail against me. As for our transgressions, you will provide atonement for them. As we read in verse 2, O you who hear prayer, to you all flesh will come. All right, iniquities prevail. Is that not true? How many times have we gone through this thing where we have allowed ourselves to get into a bad frame of mind, a bad attitude, and something wrong toward either a person or a set of circumstances or toward God, and then that after a while we think it over and we thought, well, how in the world why did I do that? How did I get into that? What made me do that? These things often happen before we realize what's happened to us. Proverbs 23 and verse number 7. So as he thinks in his heart, so is he. What he is. There was an interesting article in the paper the other day in the local newspaper, I don't know how many of you saw it, about this family of criminals. And I should have cut it out and just put it in my files, maybe for future reference, but every single one of that family ended up as criminals and in jail, except one girl. And it happened because the father taught them to be criminals from the time they were little children and sent them out to steal and to burgle and to do all kinds of things. And this is the way they grew up, a whole family of just nothing but habitual criminals. This is what people do to their own children. Instead of teaching them the moral principles of right and wrong, to fear God, to obey Him, to have respect for the law, to honor your parents. He taught them exactly that. He taught them to hate authority, and He would whip them if they didn't go out and steal something. Now, what chance do people like that have? Don't tell me the hearts of men are not fully set in them to do evil. Everyone? No. But far too many, that's for sure. All right, now let's go to the next point here. The next point is, a right heart can be desired and attained. That's right, it can be desired if we want to, and it can be attained. Why is it that some people just have a desire to want to do what's right and to do what's good, and some just hate doing good? I'll tell you, it's a matter of what the orientation is. And if a man desires it, or a woman desires to do what's right, and if they really are seeking for it, it can be attained. Man doesn't have to continue in this trap of human nature that leads him in the wrong direction. Let's go back. We've got a whole series of psalms here. Let's go to Psalm 44. Psalm 44 and verse number 21. It begins here in verse 20. If we have forgotten the name of our God or stretched out our hands to a foreign God, would not God search this out? Wouldn't he know it? How many times do we do things, and it's like one time I was with a minister on a baptizing tour. This is back in 1956. I'll never forget this as long as I live. And I had a bad habit of expectorating out the car window. And he mentioned it two or three times. And finally, he got his goat, and he looked over at me, and he said, "Do you think Jesus Christ would do that if he were here?" Well, it's the last time I spat out that car window. Yeah, Jesus spat all right, but it was for a purpose. He mixed the clay, remember, and put it on the man's eyes. But I don't think he walked around expectorating all over the place, which is really a bad habit. So it does show you that if you viewed what you do in any circumstance you're in, that Christ is there and God knows about it, how would you behave? If Christ were right there in the room with you, how would you behave? Would not God search this out? For he knows the secrets of the heart. He knows them. We're not hiding anything from him. We can hide it from other people. And sometimes somebody will say, "What are you thinking?" And they'll say, "Well, you don't want to hear." Well, that may be true. But certainly God knows it, knows about it. Psalm 119, verses 5 and 6. Psalm 119, verses 5 and 6. Oh, that my ways were directed to keep your statutes. So here was the psalmist writing here, whoever wrote this 119th psalm, saying, oh, that my ways were directed to keep your statutes. So he had a desire to want to do God's law and to do God's will. So there are people who really seek to do that. Then I would not be ashamed. You look at the messes that people get their lives in, and you just have to shake your head. And you go right back, and in every case, it'll be because there was either a lack of understanding, maybe not deliberately at all, or just utter selfishness, or a lack of self-discipline, or a lack of fear of God, or whatever reason. Then they'll create a problem that is irrevocable. I visited prison several times, but I visited prison one time, and they had this long bench, long table, and you sat on one side of the table, and the convict you were talking to sat on the other side of the table. I talked to one convict who had murdered his girlfriend's son because the girlfriend's son was going to beat him up. I talked to another convict who had robbed banks at gunpoint. But the main thing I noticed about him, they wanted out of prison. They wanted out of prison in the worst way. And if you look down that line of men who were there talking, you could see some of the most bitter men you ever laid eyes on. I mean, they were bitter. They were bitter that they were in prison. They were bitter with their lot in life. They were just full of anger and bitterness. Yeah, well, that's what it says here. Then I would not be ashamed. We want to avoid being ashamed. We ought to have respect for God and to direct our lives in His path. Skip over to verse 40 here. Behold, I long for your precepts. So if this man could long for God's precepts, then others can, and we can too. You know, just stop and think for a moment. What would it be like if we had the mind of Christ, we had the attitude of Christ, we had the love of Christ, we had the patience of Christ, we had the wisdom of Christ, we had all those things in us, and that's the way we lived, and that's the way we felt, and that's what our emotional makeup was, and that's the way our behavior was. Wouldn't that be wonderful? How close do we come to that? I tell you, we all have a long way to go, don't we? Yes, revive me in your righteousness. So here was a man seeking to have God's way. And this is the same thing we all should be seeking for. Psalm 10, verse number 17. Psalm 10, verse number 17. Lord, you have heard the desire of the humble. That's right. If someone is humble and really wants to seek to do God's will, God will hear him. You will hear it. You will prepare their heart. You will cause your ear to hear. You will prepare their heart. So this is an aim and a goal that we should be striving to attain. A right heart before God. And then achieving that right heart and that right spirit. Psalm 40 and verse number 8. I delight to do your will, O my God, and your law is within my heart. It's there. I delight to do your will. Yet what's the carnal mind like? What does the Bible say the carnal mind is like? It's enmity against God's law. It's not subject to the law of God. Neither indeed can be. There are a lot of people who view themselves as being religious people, and they have their various ideas about religion, but how would they respond if the truth really came to them? It finally dawned on them what the Bible really required of them instead of what they think it says. Would they respond the same way? Yes. Notice what we read here in Psalm 42, verse 1. As a deer pants for the water brooks, so pants my soul for you, O God. Well, I mean, that's really saying something. We'd be entirely different kind of people than we are right now. Psalm 34, verse 18. The Lord is near to those who have a contrite heart or a contrite spirit. He's near to those. That's what it takes. Not arrogance. Not puffed up. Not going to give God a piece of your mind. There are people like that, you know. God's not going to hear those people, but He'll hear those who really are contrite and humble and want to do the right thing before Him. Psalm 119, verse 17. That is verse 117. Psalm 119, verse 117. Hold me up, and I shall be safe, and I shall observe your statutes continually. Hold me up, lift me up. I'll serve you continually. You reject all those who stray from your statutes. How many times have you heard people say today, the law is done away? You don't have to keep God's commandments. Just accept Jesus Christ. Just believe. You drive down the road and there will be a fellow standing there with a big placard and he'll say, Jesus saves. He doesn't have the slightest idea what that means, and neither does anybody else hardly going by and seeing it. Well-meaning, sure. Deceived, of course. But it does illustrate once again here, there is a difference between someone who thinks they're religious and somebody who truly is. Psalm 51, verse 17. Here's what God is interested in. The sacrifices of God are a broken spirit. You see, that's why David said when he confessed his sin that he was involved with Bathsheba, he said, you don't want sacrifices. He said, if that would satisfy you, I'd give them to you. But that's not what you're after. See, clear back at that time, David knew it was a matter of the heart and mind. He said, here's the sacrifices you're interested in. They're a broken heart, a broken and a contrite heart, a broken spirit. These, O God, you will not hold in contempt. Better translation. You will not hold in contempt. All right, now let's go to the last point then. Remember now, the fundamental question here at the beginning of this sermon was, are we winning the war within? The struggle that goes on within between the spirit and the flesh. What are the benefits and the blessings of a right heart? Are there benefits and blessings to be received with a right heart and a right spirit? Well, Matthew 15, verse number 8. Here's what the prophet said, and Jesus actually applied it to his people in his day, and the same is largely true today for that matter. These people draw near to me with their mouth and honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. Oh, I can tell you, and rightly so, I'm not saying it's wrong that they take an absolute strong stand against abortion, against homosexuality, against many of these practices that are being pushed down the throats of American citizens by very well-heeled elite people of one kind or another. They get very upset what's happening in the schools. That's well and good. But do they get upset about Sabbath breaking? God's holy days? Divorce and remarriage? Idolatry? They don't get upset about those things. You never hear them bring those things up. Not dare any man that does. Dare any man that stands up any public feature, person who has any kind of notoriety, and let him dare speak out against the sins of this nation, you'll see what'll happen to him. You know, man shall not live by bread alone. He shall not live by the ideas he thinks are wrong. A man shall live by every word of God. That's what it was required. You know, if we're going to be upset about one of those things, let's recognize all of those things for what they are. Let's recognize society for what it is. Their heart is far from me. In vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. That's true today as never before. So what it shows you is that thinking you have a right heart with God, and thinking you have right standing with God, and actually having right standing with God, are two different things. Let's notice a few of the Psalms here now once again. Psalm 139. Psalm 139 and verse number 23. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my anxieties. Search me. Try my heart. That's what it's going to take. We can't cover them. We might as well be honest with God. We don't have to go around confessing our faults and sins to other people. But we certainly better be willing to do it to God. Because that's what it's going to take. Psalm 51, verse 10. Create in me a clean heart, O God. Renew a steadfast spirit within me. create in me a clean heart. That's where it comes from. We don't have the power and ability to clean our own hearts up. It's got to come from God. We've got to seek it and we've got to want it. We've got to see the blessings and the benefits from it. Psalm 19, verse number 13. Keep back your servant from presumptuous sins. Or proud sins would be a better translation. Those sins that spring from pride. You know, always justifying the self. Always trying to make the self look good. Never acknowledging the fact that we have faults and sins. Accusing other people. Misinterpreting what people do. And then thinking that we're absolutely right in what we say and do. Sins that come from pride. So that's what he says here. Let them not have dominion over me. Let them not rule over me. Then shall I be blameless and shall be innocent of great transgression. What is he saying here? If one does not check the pride in his heart and mind, he will eventually be guilty of great transgression, or as the marginal rendering says, much transgression. How many times have people made decisions about something and then they've had their judgment questioned so that they recognize their decision wasn't the best decision, and then they refuse to admit they're wrong and back down and change. You know, one of the things that people will tell you, this is a very wise thing. It says, whenever one of the wisest points of advice I've received, do I follow it? Not very well, but I certainly know about it. That is, don't force a person to take a position right off the bat. Because once they're forced to take a position, it's 10 times harder to get them to alter and change. You're better off to just give your viewpoint and not force anybody to make a decision unless you really have to. And then once they take a stand, most people will not back down. They just can't do it. There's too much pride there in human nature. That's why he says here, keep back your servant from proud sins, presumptuous sins led on by pride. If you do, what's the benefit? Then I shall be blameless, and I shall be innocent of much transgression. Let's go to Psalm 141 and verse number 4. Psalm 141, verse number 4. Do not incline my heart to any evil thing, to practice wicked works with men who work iniquity. How many times do people follow the crowd? You get with a crowd of the wrong kind of people, and how many times do people just go along with it? You know, they had an experiment that actually proved this some time ago. They had a room, a waiting room, and they had big no smoking signs up on the boards, and all these people would be sitting there, and some guy would come in and just light a cigarette. Nobody would say a word. They just sat there and put up with it. Maybe they would do it repeatedly, and then maybe 1 out of 10 persons, maybe 1 out of 20 would finally say something. People don't like to rock the boat, do they? It's easier just to go along with what's wrong than to take a firm, strong stand right at the very beginning. Let people know where you stand. There's a real benefit. Notice what we read here in verse 5. Let the righteous strike me. It shall be a kindness. At the time, it doesn't seem like it is, but that's the end result of it. Psalm 73 and verse number 1. Psalm 73, verse 1. Truly, God is good to Israel, to such as are pure in heart. We want the benefits and the blessings. We want to have goodness heaped upon us. We want all the good things from God. Here's the answer, pure in heart. Someone who's pure in heart, sincere. Jesus saw Nathanael coming toward him. He said, "Behold, an Israelite in whom there is no guile." He knew this man was honest and pure and absolutely sincere. That's right. That's what God wants to see in us. For those who are pure in heart. Psalm 112, verses 6 through 8. Surely, he will never be shaken. It's talking here about a righteous man. A good man, as we read in verse 5, he shall never be shaken. The righteousness will be an everlasting remembrance. He will not be afraid of evil tidings. He doesn't have anything to fear. His heart is steadfast, trusting in the Lord. His heart is established. He has this right kind of orientation with God, and it's established, and he's not going to be taken in the wrong direction. He will not be afraid. He will not be afraid. That's the benefits of having a pure and a right heart in the eyes of God. Luke 8, verse number 15. Here Jesus gives the example of the sower. You're all familiar with that. And the disciples didn't understand, of course, what it was about, because when he talked to the masses, he always talked to them in parables. No one understood what he's talking about. They probably said to themselves, "Well, this man's a wonderful speaker, very learned, and very, very able to express himself." But did they really understand what he meant? Even the disciples didn't. So they came to him in private, and then he'd tell them. His disciples asked him, saying, "What does this parable mean?" He didn't tell the public, but he told them later in private what it meant. He said, "To you it has been given to know the mysteries of the kingdom of God, but to the rest it is given in parables." And then he goes ahead and explains the categories of the seed that was thrown on the ground. Some by the wayside, some by the rocks, some fell among thorns, and then some fell in the right place. And what did it do? It really produced. So here he gave the answer for it. I want you to listen very carefully to what he's saying here. "The ones that fell on the good ground are those, having heard the word of God with a noble and good heart, keep it and bear fruit with patience." It's a lifelong struggle. It's a battle we must win. It's a battle that's going to continue till the day we die. But it is a battle we're engaged in. And we've got to win that battle. Who's going to be the recipient that produces fruit? One who hears it with a noble and a good heart and keeps it and bears fruit with patience. Long haul. Sometimes we might lose a battle. We regroup, however, and we don't want to lose the war. There's a difference. So that's what we've got to recognize. Proverbs 28, verse number 14. Proverbs 28, verse number 14. "Happy is the man who always fears." That is, fears God, is what it's talking about. Happy is he. He has a reverence and respect for God. That's what that word means, to have reverence and respect for. So that one is willing to listen to him and obey him and to abide by his commandments and his laws. "Happy is a man who is always reverent, who always fears. But he who hardens his heart will fall into calamity." That's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with spiritual laws that God has set in motion. And if we do not obey those laws, they have an automatic penalty. We will be the ones that suffer the consequences. Or our family, our relatives, somebody close to us will suffer the consequences along with ourselves. Let's notice a couple of psalms here as we bring this to a close. Let's go to Psalm 24. Psalm 24, verse number 3. Here's the question he asks. Very good question. "Who may ascend into the hill of the Lord? Who may stand in the holy place?" Who's going to be in God's kingdom? That's what he's asking. Here's the answer. "He who has clean hands and a pure heart." That's right. His heart corresponds with his deeds. His heart is right, and his hands have refrained from evil. Notice verse 5. He shall receive blessing from the Lord and righteousness from the God of his salvation. You know, people couldn't, I don't think a person walking down the street would ever see you and say, now that man's a true Christian. You ever had anybody say that? They don't even recognize who you are. John said that. He said they don't recognize you because they didn't recognize Christ. But that doesn't make it any less true that there are true Christians walking around on this earth today. Who are those Christians? Clean hands and a pure heart. And Psalm 37, verse number 30. Psalm 37, verse number 30. The mouth of the righteous speaks wisdom, and his tongue talks of justice. The law of God is in his heart. That's where it is. None of his steps shall slide or slip. He's not going to be like someone slipping around. His feet are solid, and he has a right relationship with God. Those are the benefits that come from having a right heart. So, you know, as I posed the original question here when I came up, are we winning the war within? That's what it is. Now, we also know there's a war that involves Satan. But I'm talking about today the war that we all struggle in and face on a regular basis, the spirit against the flesh, and the flesh against the spirit. With God's help, we can achieve it and overcome and attain to God's kingdom.